Welcome to episode 254 of the Solemn Monster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com. It is Sunday, January 6th, 2013, the first official sound off of the new year. I am the Solemn Monster. Hope y'all had a very happy new year. Want to start out here just by mentioning the fact that where there were two brand new sound offs last weekend that went up. You probably would have to be living under a rock not to know that at this point. Episode 252 last weekend. Episode 253, which was posted up on New Year's Eve, a special two-hour year-in-review edition of the Sound Off, reviewing the year for both WWE and TNA. Gave my picks for Match of the Year, Flop of the Year, among other things. We also did predictions for 2013, which should be fun to look back on 12 months from now. So if you missed out on that, that was a special episode. Go back and check that out. I want to thank everybody who sent in some positive feedback about that. Also, I uploaded another Lost Sound Off, episode number 6, to my YouTube channel on New Year's Day. My YouTube username is The Solemn Monster, all one word. Episode 6 from way back when, on December 9th, 2007, where we were actually heading into the 15-year anniversary of Raw, which is kind of ironic given that we are now heading into the 20th anniversary of Raw, coming up on January 14th in Houston. But anyway, these Lost episodes of the Sound Off, there are a bunch of other ones. Episode 1 through 5, in fact, are also up on YouTube. They are exclusive to YouTube. They will not be popping up on iTunes. So you can subscribe to my channel, and each time a new one goes up, you will be notified. So there you go. Just wanted to get that out of the way here at the beginning. Also, before we get into other affairs, I want to just mention a news item that was posted this week. The Rock has been doing the media rounds, and he did an interview with a website called Showrenity.com. And as part of this interview, he was talking about his match at WrestleMania 29. He mentioned that whatever storyline is prepared for him for WrestleMania, the kickoff, apparently will be taking place this Monday night on Raw, which is a big show as it is. It's the January 7th episode of Raw. CM Punk, according to a story on WWE.com this week, has officially been cleared to compete, which flies in the face of what they were talking about on the tape show last week when they said that he would be evaluated by doctors at the building this Monday. He may well still be, but they have already gone ahead and announced that he is cleared. He will be facing Ryback at a TLC match, it appears, for the WWE Championship, and it appears there will be no Ryback versus Heyman match, which, entertaining as it was, I was at the Madison Square Garden house show for the first Ryback versus Paul Heyman match, which may have been a bit of a test run for this. And like I said, entertaining as it may have been, probably for the better that we don't have a Ryback versus Heyman match on Monday night. So between the TLC match and The Rock being advertised as coming back, his first appearance in many months, probably I think since Raw 1000, already going to be a big show. Now Rock is teasing that his WrestleMania program, I suppose, we'll see some sort of kickoff, or we'll get some sort of hint, I guess, as to who he will be facing. As far as I know, it's still John Cena. It's possible plans have changed. There were some reports a few weeks ago that aside from the Triple H match against Brock Lesnar, surprise, surprise, Triple H's match has not changed. There were stories floating around that plans had changed. A lot of other matches had been blown up, and I don't know how true that is. I guess we'll find out this week. If they start teasing Rock and Cena, then obviously that's the direction they're going in. But Rock claims, you know, he's headlining the show again this year, which I think we all figured he would be. And it's, of course, going to be the biggest WrestleMania of all time, blah, blah, blah. I wouldn't expect him to say anything different. But just the way he kind of phrased this, it intrigues me a little bit. Because he has to understand, he has to expect that most people are figuring Rock versus Cena 2. And it almost sounded like this was his way of saying, not so fast. You know, what we have planned is actually very exciting. I think the fans are going to like it. And I guess we'll find out Monday night what potentially The Rock will be in for at WrestleMania this year. So that should be fun. Also, I tweeted something on Thursday. This also regards The Rock. And I would be curious to get your thoughts, at least if you're not on Twitter, you may not have seen it. Just a thought that I had, you know, during the week as I go over this Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, the various scenarios in my head. You know, we've heard a lot of different things about Rock versus Punk at the Rumble, things that they could do, people who, you know, may be involved. A lot of people have emailed me, and I may get to this question a little bit later on in the mailbag. I think I may have included it, but people emailing me saying, listen, is it possible that Punk could come out of the Rumble victorious over The Rock? Is it a foregone conclusion that Rock will win the championship at the Royal Rumble? And I don't think it is a foregone conclusion, even though I do still see Rock beating Punk. But in the midst of all this talk, one thing I don't hear very much about, you know, in the different scenarios about who might interfere in the match. For example, The Shield. Maybe they'll attack The Rock. Maybe they'll attack The Rock this Monday night. We don't know. But keep this in mind because, again, I don't hear many people talking about this. If it is going to be Rock versus Cena at Mania, you know, it was The Rock who cost John Cena the WWE Championship against The Miz in the main event of WrestleMania 27, which is, again, a match I'm not very fond of. But Cena was challenging for the title, arguably had a pretty decent shot of winning the championship, but it was The Rock who interfered when the match got restarted, laid out Cena with a rock bottom, and allowed Miz to get the pin. And my question is, what if John Cena returned the favor at the Royal Rumble? Is it out of the realm of possibility to think that Cena could in some way interfere in this match, directly, indirectly, accidentally, on purpose, whatever, and basically cost The Rock the WWE Championship? Now, I had other people respond and say, well, wouldn't that turn John Cena heel? Not necessarily. It depends on how they handle it. I mean, did The Rock laying out John Cena turn him heel at WrestleMania 2 years ago? No, it didn't. And the fact is, Cena's going to get booed no matter what. You know, you might already say that Cena is a heel. Cena is a heel to the people who want to boo him, you know? But no, that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, John Cena turns heel or has to turn heel. It's just a thought, you know, because I think that the finish to that WrestleMania main event sometimes goes forgotten by people. And if they are going in the direction of Rock vs. Cena 2, that would be a very intriguing, I think, way to go that maybe a lot of people wouldn't necessarily be expecting. They wouldn't expect John Cena to cost The Rock the championship. But, it, you know, hey, turnabout is fair play. The Rock blatantly cost him his WrestleMania main event. It's only fair for Cena to come back and say, hey, what's good for you is good for me. And that then gives them an issue. Because if, let's say, Rock vs. Cena is not going to be for the championship, which I still think it will be, but if it wasn't, well, now they have an issue. They've reignited their issue. The Rock is pissed. The Rock has, you know, The Rock had the title won and had it taken away from him. Now he and Cena have an issue built into their match, and it doesn't even have to be for the title. You can keep the belt on Punk another couple of months. You could do Punk vs. Undertaker or something like that if you wanted to. So, you know, again, you can build to Punk vs. Taker title vs. streak. Or you can just have The Rock win the championship in the Elimination Chamber, since a lot of people seem to think it's a foregone conclusion he's winning at the Rumble. And we know how sometimes Vince can be. If people think they know what's going to happen, we have to swerve them. We saw I think it was In Demand, put a pay-per-view advertisement out for the Elimination Chamber show, and Rock is going to be on that show. It has not yet been confirmed that he's wrestling. That's not 100% guarantee. But he is committed to being on that show, and looking at that poster, I think it's all but certain that Rock is going to be competing in one of the Chamber matches. So you can have him win it at the Chamber. I don't necessarily like that idea as much as I like him, you know, winning it in a singles match, if he's going to win it. But again, like I said, I still think Rock beats Punk at the Rumble, but let's just not forget that ending to WrestleMania 27, because I think it could very well play a role you know, in what we see unfold over the next couple of weeks. And again, if you have any thoughts on this, let me know. I'm curious to get your feedback on it. Send me an email or send me a tweet. All right, so with that out of the way, I know what many of you are waiting for. Last week, on episode 252, I mentioned that Antonio Cesaro would be defending his United States Championship against the great Khali on WWE main event this past Wednesday. And that if Cesaro could actually get Khali up for the neutralizer, I said that I would do this week's show in a Swiss accent. Well, I now really hate that move. Like, even more than I did before. Because Cesaro did, in fact, get Khali up for the neutralizer. He is a strong person. He is a Look, they call him the Swiss Superman for a reason. And I'll tell you what, it wasn't necessarily that I didn't think Cesaro was strong enough. I mean, I wasn't sure. I was more shocked than anything else that Khali would even take the move. I mean, his knees are shot. And the impact when you, at least in his case, when you get dropped down forward like that, your knees come crashing down into the mat. And he took the move full force. You know, I give him credit for even agreeing to take it. It was a very impressive sight if you did not see main event. I had to go out of my way to watch main event this week specifically to see that match. And I'm glad I did. It was a very impressive sight. So I lost the bet. And being that I lost the bet, I am a man of my word. I said that I would do the sound off in a Swiss accent. And I will preface this by saying I have no idea what you would call this accent that I have perfected here. I don't know that it's Swiss. Maybe it's closer to Swiss German than anything else. I think I've borrowed a little bit from the Count from Sesame Street and Triumph the Insult Comic Dog. So perhaps it may be some blend of the two I've created here. But I've been doing my homework on Switzerland and the Swiss and all that stuff. You know, I've learned that, for example, the Red Cross, the birthplace of the Red Cross, was in fact in Switzerland, which I was not aware of, but it makes sense given the sign, the plus sign, the symbol, the logo, whatever you want to call it. I know that the Swiss people are very well known for their chocolate, for clocks, for example, Swiss clocks. The Swiss Army knife, of which I have one. It's a very useful tool. And also, by the way, I was not aware of this, but apparently Switzerland is one of the wealthiest places in the world per capita. There are, at least at one time it was, in the last couple of years. So, very interesting facts about the Swiss people. But what I'm going to do here is the Raw review and the Impact review in a Swiss accent or some variant. I apologize in advance if you are not impressed by this, if it somehow ruins your enjoyment of the sound off, but I have been given no alternative here. People have said you must stick to your word. You have to be a man of your word. They wanted a Swiss sound off, and a Swiss sound off is what they shall get. So, ladies and gentlemen, I give to you now the Swiss Solomonster.
Hello! Let's talk about Monday Night Raw from the Washington, D.C., the capital of the United States of the Americas. I woke up on New Year's Eve. I was sick as a dog. I was around four or five different sick people a few days earlier, and I tried very hard to stop it from happening, but fought a losing battle. So, unfortunately, my New Year's plans went to hell, and I suddenly found myself able to watch Raw. And by the time this show was over, boy, was I angry. I was so angry that I had to spend my New Year's Eve watching this show instead of going out. You know, the fact that this show opened with a Miz TV segment should have been a sign. Not a very promising way to start the evening. Miz opened by telling us that tonight was, and I quote, a championships-on-the-line kind of night, end quote. And here I thought that the Championship Thursday name they use in TNA was bland and boring. Holy shit. Yeah, that's what he said. All of the champions, except for CM Punk with his gimpy knee, would be able to choose who they wanted to defend their respective title against on this show. So they basically took two concepts from TNA. Championship Thursday and Open Fight Night, which you all know I love so much, and blended them together to create this sort of hybrid, retarded brother, if you will, of what we typically see on Impact.
And reportedly, there were lots of discussion amongst the TNA stars about WWE blatantly stealing their ideas this week. Anyway, why they had Miz tell us this, I have no idea. Between this, Miz TV, him doing the announcing with Michael Cole on Main Event, I'm not even sure why the guy wrestles anymore, quite frankly. I mean, what's the point? John Cena came out. So we had both halves of the first WrestleMania main event in history on stage together. Miz tried to get him to talk about AJ. Cena had nothing bad to say. He said that he had accepted the invitation to attend Dolph and AJ's New Year's toast later in the show. Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow interrupted. This led to a match pitting Cena and Miz against the Rhodes Scholars. This was hilarious to me because they tried so hard to make it seem like Miz and Cena teaming together was a big deal, when it just felt like every other tag team match we've ever seen put together on Raw. But hey, that's their job, I guess. At least they tried. Cena and Miz won after John Cena pinned Damian Sandow with the attitude adjustment, and that was that. Backstage, Vicky Guerrero was hosting a New Year's party with all of the members of the Raw roster. Well, actually, it was mostly just a bunch of goobers. Although Dolph did show up, and Vicky booked him in a match against Sheamus. And by the way, can you guess the main event for this Wednesday's episode of Main Event? If you guess Dolph Ziggler against Sheamus, you get a cookie. It may be a new year, but every day is seemingly Groundhog Day in WWE. CM Punk and Paul Heyman showed up. They got Vicky to make a 3-on-1 handicap match, pitting the Ryback against The Shield. The great Antonio Cesaro, my home statesman, chose to defend his United States Championship against the American icon Sergeant Slaughter, who looks more and more like G. Gordon Liddy each time I see him. Cesaro beat Liddy with the neutralizer in a pretty quick match, gave him another one afterwards for good measure. And this might have been the perfect place to reintroduce Jack Swagger as a babyface, but they did not do that. Backstage, Big Show told Ricardo Rodriguez that picking him to be his opponent, he was picking him to be his opponent for the world title tonight. Ricardo dropped his drink on Big Show's boot. And all I can say about this is at least it wasn't Chris Jericho spilling coffee on Kane. That led to a three-month-long feud, if you'll recall. Elsewhere in the world's lamest party, seriously, someone has to show these people how to throw a real party. I still remember when Vince McMahon and Ric Flair threw dueling Christmas parties on Raw back in 2001. Flair's party was so lame. You had Albert and Edge putting ornaments and a Santa hat on Kane. You had Tajiri dressed up as Santa Claus. I mean, Steve Austin kept calling him Tajiri Claus for some reason. I don't know why, but it was hilarious. And meanwhile, at Vince's party, he brought in some strippers. Now, that's a real party right there. Here we had Eve telling all of the divas that she's already beaten everyone in the division. So she chose Mae Young as her opponent. Caitlin had brought Mae Young as her guest to the party. And Mae's reaction to this was fantastic. After being told that the reigning Divas champion, the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu-trained Eve Torres, was challenging her to a match, Mae Young's response was basically to say, "All right, sounds good to me." Total no-sell by Mae Young. I love Mae Young. Well, at least I love Mae Young until later in the show, but we'll get to that. Kane and Daniel Bryan beat Heath Slater and Drew McIntyre of 3MB to retain the tag team titles after Kane nailed McIntyre with a choke slam, and Bryan finished him off with the flying headbutt. CM Punk still on crutches, and Paul Heyman came to the ring with Punk's own personal physician, who showed us X-ray images on the Titantron of what a healthy knee looks like, side by side with what Punk's injured knee looks like. And Punk said he would be ready to fight the Ryback in the TLC match for the WWE title this Monday, but his own doctor butted in and said he could not allow Punk to compete next week. And Punk pretended to be very upset by this, just like he pretends to be upset whenever somebody accuses him of having anything to do with Brad Maddox or The Shield. This brought out Vince McMahon, who said that next week Punk would be evaluated by WWE doctors who would determine whether or not he is fit to compete. Paul Heyman started berating Vince McMahon, called him a flesh-peddling promoter. And I love Paul, but if that ain't the pot calling the kettle black, I believe as they say in your country, I don't know what is. You could refer to Heyman the same way from the original ECW days. But anyway, McMahon said that if Punk is unable to go, Heyman would take his place against Ryback. He didn't say if it would still be a TLC match or not. I presume not. But as I said earlier, it appears as though it's a moot point because it will be Punk versus the Ryback. And just give me a moment here. I want to take a piece of my my Swiss chocolate that I picked up the other day. This stuff is really good. All right. Here was I. Dolph Ziggler and Sheamus ended 2012 the same way they spent much of it, wrestling each other. Match was fine, but I've seen these two wrestle more than enough. Went to a no contest. Sheamus was teasing a bro kick when Big E Langston grabbed his foot from the outside. They teased a long stare down between Sheamus and Langston when the Shield jumped Sheamus from behind. They beat him up for a little bit. They gave him the triple team powerbomb. Backstage, Wade Barrett tricked Kofi Kingston into giving him a shot at the Intercontinental title because Kofi is an idiot. Seriously. Cesaro picks Sergeant Slaughter as his challenger. Kane and Daniel Bryan pick 3MB. Big Show picks Ricardo Rodriguez. Eve picks Mae Young. And Kofi admits that he does not want to give Wade another title shot because he doesn't think he deserves it, so he gives him one anyway. Punk should just kick Kofi off his tour bus and make him run behind it to the next town because he's so stupid. Speaking of Mae Young, back at the New Year's party, she was clutching her stomach. I figured she just had some gas. But they laid her on the table. A doctor arrived to check her out. Turns out she's pregnant. I figured it was the other hand. But boy, was I wrong. They did have a funny shot of Mae Young saying, "Not again," after the doctor said this. But then she said it again. A second time. Not sure why they didn't just edit that part out of a taped show. It's kind of baffling to me. Actually, this whole segment was baffling to me. Actually, how these guys get a top-rated network like USA to pay them almost $900,000 per episode, that's what's baffling to me most of all. So, with Mae in labor, Eve came out. She had no opponent. Time on the Diva stopwatch this week, a cool 0 minutes, 0 seconds. Kind of lends credence to my prediction, eh? For the Divas division in Sound Off 253. Eve wanted a photographer to take pictures of her. I want a photographer to take pictures of her as well, preferably topless. But Caitlyn came out. She beat the hell out of her for a little while before Eve escaped. Backstage, Alberto Del Rio gave Ricardo his scarf and his car keys and told him to win the title from Big Show in style. They actually showed highlights later on in the show from the Christmas Eve edition of Raw, which involved a show-long storyline, mind you, based around Del Rio running over Santa Claus and wrestling John Cena in the main event. If Alberto really has turned babyface, why would they air footage from that show? It was such a throwaway show, and you're trying to get this guy over as a face. It just struck me as tone-deaf on their part to even bother airing highlights from that show in the first place. Ricardo drove to ringside. Well, he drove out, I should say, in Del Rio's Mercedes, but sadly, he did not do his own ring introduction. He did wrestle in a suit, as did Low-Key, by the way. Forgot to mention a little bit earlier, I checked out the New Japan pay-per-view. There was a New Japan pay-per-view that aired a couple of days ago called Wrestle Kingdom 7. Which has gotten some great praise from people as being one of the greatest shows of all time. And having watched it last night, I can tell you that it was a very, very good show. And in fact, I probably enjoyed Low-Key's triple threat match with Prince Devitt and Kota Ibushi more than any other match on the show. Very good main event, too, between Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kazuchika Okada, I believe his name is. But anyway, well, I should know that Okada is actually supposedly being sought after by WWE. So there's your WWE tie-in right there. But anyway, just wanted to mention that. Low-key was dressed up as Agent 47 from the Hitman video game. He wrestled the entire match that way. He actually came to the ring with two guns, one in each hand. That would never fly in the PG WWE. But still a very good pay-per-view show, if not, I think, a bit overhyped. I don't look at it as the greatest pay-per-view I've ever seen. But you can check it out. It's available on demand on Ustream.com. You can check out the New Japan iPay-per-view. Anyway, back to Raw. Alberto came out to cheer his friend. Big Show toyed with him for a while. Then he let himself get distracted by Alberto on the outside. Ricardo fought. He actually caught Big Show with a running enziguri. This was picture perfect. And he had some real momentum here. The fans were into it. He climbed to the middle rope. He jumped off and he got chopped to hell by Big Show. And Alberto ran in for the DQ at this point, so he cost his friend a chance to be the world champion. But Ricardo didn't seem to be too bothered by it, and Big Show was pissed. A fun match. I enjoyed this. It was the classic, you know, David versus Goliath battle. A very simple yet effective story. By the way, why does Jerry Lawler insist on telling us at the start of the 10 p.m. hour that we are just getting started here on Raw? The fuck have I been watching for the past 2 hours? While I'm on the subject of Lawler, was it just me or did he ratchet up the corny one-liners this week to an absurd degree? I haven't heard this many bad jokes on one show since Jimmy Fallon came to Late Night. I mean, I love Lawler, but Christ, can we please switch up the announcing on this show? I figured it would kind of slip back into mediocrity once JBL left, but please, somebody, do something. Wade Barrett beat Kofi Kingston to win the Intercontinental title in a good match. Clean win, too, by Wade. Beat Kofi fair and square. He used his old Wasteland finisher at one point, which Kofi kicked out of because it's not his finisher anymore, you see. He used Chris Hero's elbow finish for the win. Well, he calls it the bullhammer, I guess, but really he stole it. He stole that move. They claim this was Barrett's second Intercontinental title. I literally forgot that he had held the title once before, which shows you how insignificant his reign really was. And so much for me picking Barrett as a dark horse to win the Royal Rumble if John Cena does not win this year. I no longer believe that Wade Barrett has a chance to win the Royal Rumble. John Cena, on the other hand, still has a very good chance to win the Royal Rumble match. To the back, where Mae Young is about to blow, we hear a farting noise, which I'm sure had Vince McMahon in stitches. We were supposed to think that it was May, but then Vicky apologized, so I guess that's supposed to be funny, that Vicky farted, I guess? I don't know. Great Khali was responsible for holding up Mae Young's legs while she was spread eagle, and it looked like he could not possibly have cared any less about what was going on. Kane and Daniel Bryan started shouting yes and no over and over again at each other. May gave birth to the New Year's baby, which turned out to be Hornswoggle. And all I could say is, somebody needs to sterilize this fucking woman already. And while you're at it, sterilize every person who is responsible for this segment making it on the air. From the person who conceived it, to the people who wrote it, to the people who produced it. Sterilize every last one of them so that they may never be allowed to bear offspring. Maybe that way we could avoid segments like this in the future. I'm sorry. 2 weeks in a row of this is, it's just, it's too much. Too much. First Santa, now this. And to add insult to injury, they go back to the announce booth after this abomination. And we see Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler fake laughing while they watched this. I would rather jab my eyeballs with hot pokers than listen to another minute of fake laughter from Michael Cole. I would rather listen to somebody do a podcast in a fake Swiss accent than listen to Michael Cole fake laugh on TV. It's like comedians who laugh at their own jokes. just wretched sheet this was. This was sheet. Did Ryback against the Shield. There was no match. Shield attacked Ryback on the outside. Then it spilled inside. Then Sheamus ran down for the save, but he got beaten down as well. And then finally out came Randy Orton, looking for revenge on the men who attacked him. This was too much for Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose, who retreated back into the crowd. Ambrose's facial expressions here were great, especially when Orton came out. Then came the Dolphin AJ New Year's toast, which I guess means that Wade and Kofi was actually our main event this week. Ziggler spent an eternity showing us clips of what took me all of 20 seconds to talk about here on the Sound Off, running through all of the moments from John Cena's crappy 2012, including his loss to The Rock, Brock Lesnar killing him, losing to John Laryngitis, and of course his loss to Dolph at TLC. And this just highlighted the absurdity of Cena winning the Superstar of the Year at the Slammies. This brought out John Cena, who showed funny photos on the Titantron of what Dolph and AJ's baby would look like, and what all of AJ's other children would look like. And then in the midst of all of this comedy, John Cena launched into a worked shoot mode promo, admitting that he had one bad season in 10 years in WWE. He said Dolph has been here for 7 years and blames everybody but himself for being held down and not getting a push. He said Dolph's story went like this. First you were a caddy, then you were a cheerleader, then you had blonde hair, then you had brown hair, now you have blonde hair. Then you had a large girlfriend, now you have a small girlfriend. Now you have a large man, that being Langston. And you walk around with a suitcase that has a contract for some with some Valtrex. You get it? Because AJ is a whore, you see. So Cena then announced he was entering the 2013 Royal Rumble match and guaranteed he would be champion again. He talked about the irony of AJ wearing white. She was wearing a white dress on this show. And as he said this, sheet fell from the ceiling on Ziggler and AJ in the ring. Because it was so funny the first time they did it with DX and the McMahons all those years ago. You know, from what WWE would have you believe were the glory days of DX. And so Dolph and AJ, they shrieked in horror. Cena smiled. And as I tweeted on Monday night, I cannot think of a more appropriate finish for the final Raw of 2012 than for it to end with a giant pile of sheet. Okay, let's move on now to Impact Wrestling from Thursday night. This was the first live Impact in many weeks. There had been several taped shows. This was the big 1-3-13 show they've been hyping. Jeremy Borash greeted us in the ring to open the first Impact of 2013 with a very generic-looking trophy standing in the background. This was to announce the winner of the fan voting for TNA Superstar of the Year. And each of the candidates walked out onto the stage. Bully Ray, James Storm, who actually was the biggest loser in 2012. So by WWE fan voting logic, he probably should have won this award. Austin Aries came out, Bobby Roode, and Jeff Hardy. Of course, Hardy won. He is the world champion, but no way did he have a better year than Austin Aries. Jeff said that this award means as much to him as the TNA world title, which Bobby Roode and the Solo Monster both took great exception to when he said this. Eddie's then piped in. He said that the voting was rigged. I can't imagine such a thing in pro wrestling. Eddie's and Roode were both bickering and bitching, and all of a sudden Hardy said, "You know what? At Genesis, which is the next pay-per-view, I'm going to defend my world title against both of you guys." Yep, just like that. Jeff Hardy volunteered to put his title on the line against both Aries and Roode. Now, mind you, he's beaten both of these men. In the case of Aries, he's beaten him more than once. He doesn't have to defend the title against either one of them, yet he volunteers to defend against both at the same time. I believe that does, in fact, trump Kofi Kingston for the Dumb Babyface of the Week award. So, Jeff wins two awards this week. His new year is already off to a rip-roaring start. Aries and Roode attacked Hardy. Aries tried to hit Hardy with the trophy, but he missed. He hit Roode instead. Hardy sent them packing. He collected his now broken trophy and he left. James Storm was in the back being interviewed about being a loser. Daniels and Kazarian, bad influence, the best tag team at wrestling, interrupted. This was great. Kaz interviewed Daniels, who did this hilarious redneck, I believe they call it, impersonation of James Storm. You really need to watch this to fully appreciate it. Storm then cut a very unfunny promo in response. He said, you know, he's going to use words that you guys would understand, and he threw in the words Facebook and Twitter, and I think he said something about Instagram. He challenged one of them to wrestle him next, and then he spit in Daniel's appletini, which is just unsanitary. We don't tolerate that here in Switzerland. And he walked away. Kaz said that he forgot to mention MySpace. He called him a turd. I laughed at that. Let's move on here a little bit. I lost some of my Impact notes, so you'll have to bear with me here. There was a James Storm-Kazarian match. Unfortunately, Kazarian lost. I think I've said before that it always appears that when they have singles matches or even tag team matches that Kazarian is always the one, almost always the one, taking the fall. And I don't know that I like that too much. It just makes Kazarian seem like too much of a jabroni, you know, and that's not what he should be. He should be much more than that. But Storm won. It was a pretty cool finish. He caught Kazarian coming off the second rope with the last call super kick, and that was that. Backstage, we had an Aces and Eights segment where Devon told Mr. Anderson, speaking of jabronis, he wanted an answer from him if he was going to be with them or not. Mr. Anderson was in no great rush to give him an answer because he was still enjoying the company of some beautiful ladies that Devon had given him. Whores, in fact, that Devon had given to him last week. We had Doc came to the ring, the former Luke Gallows, to cut what was basically his first real promo out in front of the crowd. And it was not good. This was not good. That's all I could say about that. He was seemingly calm, and almost instantly, he went into this mass hysteria as he waited for Sting to come out, because you see, Sting has promised that he was going to destroy Doc for hitting him with the hammer. And so Doc came out to look for Sting and asked for Sting to come out, and Sting didn't come out, and so he just flipped his shit, basically, and started overacting, and he was, you know, calling out Sting's name, and they just went to commercial. This was garbage. This whole segment was a waste of time, and if it was any indication of the kind of, you know, promo ability that Doc has, then Doc is better off putting the mask back on and not doing any speaking at all. Christian York defeated Kid Cash in a pretty good match. He beat him with his mood swing finish. So I guess they're doing some sort of X Division mini tournament to determine who faces RVD for the championship at Genesis, and so Christian York has advanced. Chavo Guerrero did an interview backstage, which he should never, ever do. His interviews are so boring. He's just not good. Chavo is very, very bland, and he just rambles on, and I don't know what else to say about this, except it was pretty bad. It was supposed to be Matt Morgan against Hernandez in a singles match, but Matt Morgan came out with a cast on. His arm was in a sling. Anybody with half a brain could tell that it was a fake injury, but I guess the baby faces didn't know any better. Hernandez fought Joey Ryan instead. Of course, Morgan took the sling off. He ended up attacking both men, and this sucked. And apparently, they're going to meet each other for the tag team titles at the pay-per-view, and it just begs the question, why are Daniels and Kazarian not the tag team champions right now? They're the best thing going today in tag team wrestling. They're the best thing going, perhaps, in all of TNA. And I have to suffer through Hernandez and Chavo defending against Matt Morgan and Joey Ryan. Just seems very unfair to me. Hulk Hogan came to the ring. He apologized for being off TV last week. Did not mention anything about his new restaurant opening down in Florida. And he called up Bully Ray and his daughter Brooke. And basically Hogan was just beside himself with rage. Bully Ray admitted he should have been more open and upfront with Hulk about the relationship with him and Brooke. So basically, I guess Bully was lying the entire time when he claimed that there was nothing to talk about. He said there is something to talk about. He apologized. And Hulk Hogan reacted to this by suspending him indefinitely without pay. And he told his daughter to get the hell out of his face as well. This reminded me of that promo that Vince McMahon did on SmackDown back in the day. Would have been 01, I believe, when he was yelling at his daughter, Stephanie. And he called her, I think, a spoiled, rich little bitch. And yelled at her and said, get the hell out of my life and stay out. One of the all-time classic evil Vince McMahon promos. This was Hulk Hogan's time, I guess, to do his best evil Vince McMahon impersonation. And it wasn't quite as good, but I've seen worse segments with Hulk Hogan. Let's just put it that way. So, unfortunately, I guess that means Bully Ray is off television for the foreseeable future. But not house shows, by the way. Bully Ray was wrestling on TNA house shows. So how they explain that as somebody who is indefinitely suspended and not being paid, I have no idea. We had a Joseph Park segment. It was more of a compilation package, really, more than anything else, showing his highlights from Ohio Valley Wrestling. They had comments from Danny Davis, who said that Joe Park has made tremendous progress. Joe Park thinks he is now a wrestler. He is ready to wrestle. This was very well done. I look forward to Joe Park's in-ring, I guess, re-debut, whenever that may be. We had a knockouts tag team match, Mickey James and Miss Tessmacher against Gail Kim and Tara. This was very, very good. This was probably the best women's match I've seen on television in WWE or TNA all of 2012 into 2013. Just a very good match. You know, rough in a couple of spots, but by no means was it a bad match. And the big thing about this is they gave them a lot of time. You don't see women's matches get this much time. This match was over, I think, 12 or 13 minutes. I should have timed it on my stopwatch, but this thing went well over 10 minutes. Like I said, probably closer to 12 or 13. You just don't see the women, even on pay-per-view, let alone on TV, getting this much time. And it was great. Maybe it's a sign that if you give the women time to have a real match like you do with the men, you know, that they can actually put together a match that isn't so, you know, craptacular and botchtastic because they don't feel the need to rush through all of their moves. So hopefully this is the sign of things to come and not a sign of the real apocalypse here. Kurt Angle in the main event teamed up with Samoa Joe against the Aces and Eights, Devon, and some masked moron from the group. And Kurt got attacked immediately to the point where he was trapped outside the cage. Poor Samoa Joe got locked inside the cage by himself. So for much of the match, he was a two-on-one handicap match, basically. He was being beaten down. Doc had padlocked the cage shut. And eventually, Angle was able to give Doc a low blow. He grabbed the key. He got inside the cage. And Kurt did end up getting busted open. He was bleeding a gusher at one point. Only mere days after having his fourth baby. So congratulations to Kurt Angle and his sexy wife. We had a massive beatdown going on basically inside of the cage until they got some momentum. Angle was able to get a Angle slam on the masked man and pinned him. So yet again, to prove my point about what a lame-ass faction they are, the Aces and Eights lose another match. Could you imagine when the NWO was first getting big in WCW if they lost 9 out of 10 of their matches? Do you think the NWO would have gone on to become as big and as powerful and influential and successful as they became? And you could say that about any faction. I'm just using the NWO as an example. You could say that about DX. You could say that about the Hart Foundation. Of course not, because nobody will take them seriously. But it seems like Aces and Eights has lost every single match, I think, except the one match that gave them access back to the Impact Zone. I think since then they've lost almost every match. I know Devon won the TV title, but this is ridiculous here. And after the match, a bunch of Aces and Eights people ran down into the cage. They were beating up Joe. They were beating up Angle. And this whole show had been built around the return of Sting. Okay, the TNA Hall of Famer, former world champion, the biggest star arguably in the company, the way they position him anyway. Where is Sting? Sting had not yet made one appearance on the show. We've seen promos in the weeks leading up to Impact with Sting in the trench coat saying, I'm going to get you, Aces and Eights. It's the end of Aces and Eights. I'm coming for you, Doc. All of these different things. So we're waiting for Sting. We figure maybe Sting will come from the rafters, although I don't think they've done anything like that since Owen Hart died, so I don't know that they would have had him rappelling from the ceiling, but people are looking up. They're looking all around. Where is he? Is the lights going to go out? Is he going to come up from under the ring? Where is Sting? And in the midst of all of this carnage as it is going on, all of a sudden, we see Sting casually walking down to the ring in a t-shirt, looking no different than he was the last time we saw him. He just strolls into the cage and starts laying waste to Aces and Eights all by himself, just like he did back in the day with the NWO. Although, at least back then, Sting had a bat. Sting may have had a bat this time, I don't know. I think he did have a baseball bat at least, so that's you know, you can argue, okay, fine, he had a weapon, but still. This was Sting's big return after all of these weeks and all of the promos. He comes out in a fucking t-shirt and just strolls down to the ring looking like he would rather be anywhere else but there. Probably thinking to himself, man, I could have had a match with The Undertaker at WrestleMania this year. Why did I resign with this company? So in the end, they unmasked the Aces and Eights dude. It was Mike Knox. They tried to make a big deal on commentary about how he was from the WWE. This was so low rent. This was so dumb. I'm happy they unmasked somebody. I've been saying for weeks they need to unmask more people, so I give them thumbs up on that. At least they followed through on their promise. But, you know, you can't expect people to react in such a surprising way when you unmask all of these mid-card guys, the castaways, essentially, from WWE. It just makes you look second rate. But the Sting thing, I can't get over the Sting thing. Just perhaps the most anticlimactic return of a big star in either promotion that I could ever remember. Even when Chris Jericho came back last year and said nothing, he went around the ring, he was smiling, he was laughing, and then he just left. At least that was different. It was intriguing. It was part of a storyline. It was meant to be that way. And the fans were reacting to him. He still had a big entrance. He had the light bright jacket. This was just, I mean, why was Sting wearing his old Sting face paint and the trench coat and everything in the advertisements if he was going to come out in a fucking t-shirt? Why was there no music? Why was there no... Where was the cameraman? It was almost like they accidentally caught him just as he was finally down the aisle. It just... I don't know. This was so lame. This was such an underwhelming, event when it was built up to be something special. So, not the very good way, I think, for TNA to open the new year. And hopefully it's onward and upward from here, because this thing returned was just complete garbage as far as I'm concerned. All right, so there you have it. The Swiss Salamaster, ladies and gentlemen, probably making his one and only appearance here on the Sound Off. Again, I apologize to anybody out there who speaks with a Swiss accent. I know that I don't quite know what you would call this accent other than it was something other than my own. I did what I could. I did my best. So, hopefully you found that entertaining in a perverse way. My hope is that you found it at least more entertaining than the Mae Young segment from Raw Monday Night. If you found it more entertaining than that segment, that piece of garbage from Monday Night that they try to pass off as comedy, then that makes me feel good. And what else makes me feel good is when I get emails from you guys. You can email me questions, comments. Boy, I'm sure some of you will have comments about this show when this is over. You can email me at thesolomonster@gmail.com. AJ Bualda writes in, I'd like to request a shout-out for my girlfriend, Jania, not only because she supports and loves me, but also for taking a shine to pro wrestling. Being from the Netherlands, pro wrestling is not well-known, yet she took a chance and loved it so much that in April we will be attending the Raw Revenge Tour together. She is here to show the world that wrestling is not a guy's only hobby. I also like to thank you, Solomonster, for your entertaining and informative show. I always look forward to Sundays and another chance to hear your views on the product. So that comes from AJ. This letter comes from Tiernan Strickland. I am from the small town of Ballymena. Actually, I think it's pronounced Ballymena. At least I hope it is. In Northern Ireland, and I am a lifelong wrestling fan, in particular WWE. I hugely enjoy this podcast and would probably say it's the best out there on the internet. You do an excellent job, and please keep them coming. My 9-year-old brother, who happened to be in my room at the time I was listening to episode 252, howled with laughter during your description of the ridiculous Miracle on 34th Street fight between Alberto Del Rio and John Cena on the Christmas Eve edition of Raw. I write to you with my prediction on how Big Show will lose the world title. I believe this moment will occur at WrestleMania 29 with Ryback, who will get his WrestleMania moment when he hopefully lifts Big Show up and delivers Shell Shock to the Giant. I pray that Big Show calls it quits after he loses, as I believe he has gotten quite stale in recent years, and find myself skipping over the majority of his segments. Really, I mean, that's interesting to me, because I actually have found some of Big Show's recent promo work to be the best of his career. All right. And anyway, he says, finally, I would just like to say that I visited New York last summer and made a personal pilgrimage to Madison Square Garden due to its history with WWE. I may not have gotten to see a WWE event there, but the sight of it alone gave me goosebumps. I will be back someday. Well, if you ever come back and you actually can go to the Garden for an event, whether it's a basketball game or a wrestling show, they're continuing to do renovations on the building. So it'll probably look even nicer than it does now. So I'm sure the Garden will be there waiting whenever you are ready to make your big return to New York. Cliff writes in, I love how John Cena criticized Dolph Ziggler on the New Year's Eve edition of Raw for changing gimmicks and his hair color over the last 7 years. Yeah, because we've all loved John Cena doing the exact same thing for all the last 7 years. WWE has guaranteed that Cena will never deviate from what he is now. He will be a super babyface for the rest of his career. The only way John Cena can ever turn heel is if he pushes a Make-A-Wish kid's wheelchair over. Don't go giving them ideas now for angles. Nicolito writes in, now, I'm not one of the guys who begs for the Attitude Era every week, but wouldn't it be a good idea if WWE raised the age rating on Raw and SmackDown to a more mature level and created a couple of new shows that are aimed at kids? It could be a good way of raising the ratings and maybe making new people interested in pro wrestling. What is your opinion on this? Also, can me and my twin brother Dominic get a shout-out as we both turn 19 on Monday? I can't remember if I first heard the sound off on episode 86 or 87, but he started listening episode 174 thanks to my persuasion. So happy birthday to Nicolito and Dominic. You know, as far as raising the ratings on the shows, it's not going to happen. But, you know, and plus you mentioned, you know, creating new shows aimed at kids. There is one already. It's called Saturday Morning Slam, which... it really could not be any more aimed at kids than it is, to the point where shots to the head are not allowed on that show. I think I may have mentioned that. Or somebody may have pointed out to me the Rey Mysterio 619 to Michael McGillicuddy many weeks ago. Only he gave McGillicuddy the 619 to the ass, to the anus, instead of to the head. Stuff like that. That show is geared towards kids, and that's fine. I have no problem with that. But the product itself, again, as I mentioned to other people who have asked the same question, they have sponsors to answer to. They have shareholders to answer to. They have partners to answer to, like Mattel, who apparently they've made guarantees to Mattel and maybe some others that the product will not be a certain way. Now, I don't know what that way is. I don't know how they described it to them. I don't know if it's specifically laid out that says, you know, thou shall not allow... half-naked women, thou shalt not allow these, you know, this list of words to be used on the show. I don't know exactly what the nature of those promises were. All I know is they're in bed, they're in business with people like Mattel, and they have very lucrative deals with these people that they do not want to fuck up, and it's more important to them that they don't mess those relationships up than, you know, take the product in a more, PG-13 direction just to try to pop a rating that, quite frankly, I'm not even sure they're going to be able to get the numbers back up to that level. You know, they are where they are. I think if they just put out an entertaining show with storylines that make sense, they have big stars back every now and then, like Brock Lesnar and The Rock, if they can come up with, compelling things for these guys to do. And you'll notice around WrestleMania season every year, like last year, they do tend to push the envelope a little bit. I go back to when, you know, Cena was first cutting those promos on The Rock in response to what The Rock said about him. Cena did that one battle rap. He had like a purple pinwheel in his hand. He basically told The Rock to blow him on television. You know, they can do stuff like that when they want to. And I think as we get closer to WrestleMania, you're going to see more of it, especially when The Rock comes back to TV full time. You know, The Rock is not a PG guy. The Rock is going to cut promos. He'll crack jokes about, you know, this guy's gay or this guy, you know, wears, looks like a Fruity Pebble or a Fruit Loop or whatever. And most of the time it's entertaining. You know, sometimes it's juvenile, but you'll start to see more of that. So if you are a fan of that, then this next 3 months or so is probably going to be your favorite time of year to pay attention to the WWE product, because this is the time of year when they do push things a little bit further than they would the rest of the year. Ben from Fresno, California writes in, "I've been a fan of your show since the beginning of WWE Stand Up for Breast Cancer campaign and have been listening ever since. Will CM Punk ever be a bigger or at least as big of a name in WWE than John Cena? I'm just curious because Cena really seems to be the only big dog in the company these days. At least 10 years ago, we had more than one major guy like Stone Cold, The Rock, Undertaker, Triple H, Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, Goldberg, Shawn Michaels. What do you think?" Well, there were also far more bigger names in WWE than there are today, like the list that you just mentioned. That's just a fact. A lot of those guys have since, they've retired. They're part-time, or in the case of Kurt Angle, they went to TNA, which was for his own good. I think Punk is already a big name, but will he ever be as big as Cena? I don't think so. You know, each era has that one really big personality that is kind of associated with that time period more than anyone else. You know, you take Hogan during the 80s and the early 90s, for example. You've got the Attitude Era. Attitude Era had tons of stars. And I guess you could argue that, you know, Rock may have gone on to become a bigger name than Austin. Rock is a far bigger mainstream personality than Steve Austin. And they're both making movies. Obviously, Rock's movies are a bit more mainstream. They're not direct to DVD. They're doing a lot better. But back then, like when Austin went down with the neck injury and had to take almost a year off, it was Rock and Triple H who really stepped up to the plate and carried that company on their back, and Rock became the top babyface. So when Austin came back, who was the bigger star? Was it Austin or was it Rock? At that point, I think it may have been a little more even. But the real success came before Austin had the neck surgery, and you can't tell me that Rock was a bigger star than Stone Cold. There were weeks, you know, when Rock turned from heel to babyface in that 99 period, there may have been weeks that Rock got a bigger ovation, that Rock's pop was a little bit louder. But more often than not, it was Austin who had the crowd, you know, in a frenzy and had the crowd going crazy and was doing better business, you know, than Rock was. That Attitude Era period is defined on Austin versus McMahon. It's not just about Austin versus McMahon. I've had people write into me before and angrily kind of argue the Attitude Era was not just about Austin versus McMahon. I'm not saying it was. But what I'm saying is that is the storyline, that is the feud that has come to be associated with the Attitude Era. When I think of the Attitude Era, even though it may have started in 96, 97, you know, that's when it really started to take root with guys like Bret and Shawn and Austin and Undertaker, even Sid, you can make the argument, you know, late 96. But I think of Austin versus McMahon, because at the end of the day, you know, that really is what the company was based around for, I was going to say a year, probably even more than a year. The Austin versus McMahon stuff really started in late 97. And it went through, I mean, right through 99. I mean, you know, Austin and McMahon feuded in the years after that as well, off and on. But for all intents and purposes, I mean, that thing went for over a year, year and a half. That's what I think of when I think of the Attitude Era. And Stone Cold is the guy associated more than Rock, more than Foley, more than Triple H or anybody else with that era. So you have John Cena, to go back to the original question here. Cena's also had so many more years on top than Punk, and probably has at least a few more yet to come. I know Cena's not getting any younger. He's 35 now. Vince is probably already thinking, okay, who's the next guy? Sheamus, they probably want Sheamus to be that guy. I can't see Sheamus being that guy. He can be a top guy. He is a top guy right now. He could be number two. I don't see Sheamus ever being number one. But John Cena's got a couple more years in him, I think, on top. He's already had 10 in the company. Many of those 10 years were on top. I don't see CM Punk sticking around on top for as long as John Cena has. Punk's already teased retirement, probably in the next 2 years. Now, a lot of guys say that, but I think he's serious. I think he was ready to step away in 2011. And like he said, go sit on his couch in Chicago and just do nothing. And then WWE gave him what he wanted, so he stayed. And in that time, I mean, they've run the poor guy ragged. I mean, I know he's got his own bus and all that, but, you know, still, he's the champ. He's wrestling all the time. He's doing a lot more media, a lot more publicity, waking up early for the radio interviews. When he loses the championship, whether it's at the Royal Rumble, if it's at WrestleMania, whatever, wouldn't shock me if Punk said, listen, I need some time off, and maybe took a few months off. And in the next 2 years, 3 years, is he going to retire? I don't know. He might. So I don't think CM Punk will ever be looked at as being as big of a star as John Cena. And to be honest, he shouldn't be. You know, so he's been the champion for 400 plus days. Big deal. We're talking business here. Punk doesn't move numbers the way that John Cena does. He doesn't sell tickets to the house shows the way that John Cena does. He doesn't move ratings the way that most John Cena main events move ratings. He doesn't sell as much merchandise, even though at one point he did. If we're talking business, ain't no way he's ever going to be looked at on the same level as John Cena. Most guys won't. Randy Orton won't. Edge won't. Sheamus won't, I don't think. And that's not a knock on Punk. It's just that's the way Cena's been positioned. Cena is the chosen one. Look at each era. Look at the Hogan era. Hogan was the chosen one. Now, Hogan was charismatic and people liked him and they took to him, by and large. Same thing with Austin, although Austin wasn't the chosen one. Austin forged his own path. By no means was, believe me, by no means was the Stone Cold Steve Austin character the kind of sanitized, promotional babyface the company had envisioned building everything around. It just kind of happened that way. But Cena was the chosen one. And at some point, you can resist and you can push back and you can say, stop shoving this shit down my throat. But at some point, it's going to work. And even though people still boo Cena and all that, he still does big business, bigger than anybody else. Jake from Long Island, New York writes in, I've been listening to your show now for about 3 years, still very excited every Sunday when a new sound off is uploaded. My question to you is, do you think that you would be able to extend CM Punk's title reign for about another month by having Punk somehow beat Rock at Rumble and start a mini program between the two of them? Since Rock is confirmed for the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view, you can have him and Punk end the WWE Championship Chamber match and Rock can win the belt there. I think it would be huge for Punk to beat Rock, and then it could give him new material for his promos bragging about WWE being the WWE champ for so long and beating everybody who stepped in his way. Look, you can do that. I talked about this earlier. You can definitely do that, but I don't like the idea of them doing it just for the sake of doing it. Like, if they figure, okay, people think Rock's going to win, let's surprise them. And let's extend Punk's reign for another month and have Rock win it in the chamber. If they have a plan, which I think they do, I say stick with the plan. If the plan is for Rock to win at the Rumble, and you've got something special plan, whether it's Rock Cena or whoever it is, stick with the plan. Don't deviate from the plan. But if they don't know what they're doing, or the plan is for Punk to win anyway, I won't cry about it. I mean, you know, it would be a huge feather in Punk's cap to have a win over the Rock, you know, under his belt, even though I'm sure it would be tainted. So, again, how much he could really harp about it, I don't know. I mean, I guess a win is a win. But yeah, they can do it. Absolutely. If Rock is confirmed for the chamber and is wrestling at the chamber, it opens up a lot of other options for them. But to me, at this point, he's been champion for 400 plus days. Another month, you know, is not going to make a difference. Now, if Punk holds on to the title until WrestleMania, that's a different story. because to me, that would be huge for CM Punk. CM Punk wants to be so badly in a WrestleMania main event, the last match on the show. He said that's the only thing left in his career he has not yet done that he wants to do. And to be in a WrestleMania main event defending the championship or fighting for the championship is a big deal. And to me, you know, if Punk is still the champion come WrestleMania, the only opponent that really would make sense at that point for him probably would be The Undertaker, because you can do the streak versus title gimmick. And if Undertaker wins the title, which he would have to, I would imagine, I just can't see them continuing Punk's reign beyond WrestleMania and having him as this hated villain, you know, kind of just beat The Undertaker and the streak and, all right, thanks for joining us. So long, everybody. I can't see that happening. So Undertaker would win the belt. Can he defend it? No, he can't. I mean, if everybody is to be believed who's had anything to say about Undertaker and his physical state of mind, his physical condition, Undertaker is in no position to be wrestling even semi-consistently, you know, and defending the championship at, you know, certainly not at house shows and stuff like that. So what? Undertaker wins the championship, and in winning, you know, in victory, is so badly battered and beaten that he can not defend the championship, and so the title is declared vacant. You now have a tournament that could culminate either at the pay-per-view, I guess that would be Extreme Rules, later in April, or my idea in that case would be just wait until the April 29th edition of Raw to have the tournament finals, which is the night that you are commemorating the 50th anniversary of the WWE Championship, and that's the night you unveil and debut your new championship belt that's been talked about for so long. And again, we're just fantasy booking now, but I'm just saying, if that's a direction you wanted to go in, they could also do that. Extending Punk's reign by 1 month in the chamber, so what? What does that really accomplish? So he's got another 4 weeks as the champion. He loses it at some B-show pay-per-view. Stick with the plan, and if he's going to lose it at the Rumble, he should lose it at the Rumble. He should lose to The Rock. Now, if that's not the plan, and they're thinking about keeping the belt on Punk at Mania, that's cool too, because to me, that's such a bigger deal. I wouldn't have a problem with that either. All right, let's do two more here. Dave from Southern California writes in, I noticed at a point in the CM Punk documentary, the Best in the World DVD, they were really putting over Samoa Joe. I know the two are really good friends and that WWE is very interested in Samoa Joe. So was that a way of WWE reaching out to Joe? I don't know where you're hearing that WWE is very interested in Joe. I've never heard that. You know, if they wanted Samoa Joe, believe me, before his contract, his most recent contract was up, whenever that was, I can't remember. If he signed a new deal last year, he may still be in the midst of a deal. I am of the impression that Joe either just re-signed or is still under the deal, but either way, he's got some time left on his contract where he's not about to go anywhere. But before that, you know, before he signed his current deal, if there were floaters out there that indicated to him that there was an interest from WWE, I think he certainly would have heard them out. And I was never aware of any of that happening. Because Samoa Joe, you look at him, he's not what WWE sees in a wrestler. And I disagree with that. I think Samoa Joe, you know, look, has Joe let himself go a little bit? I don't think there's any question about that. If you look at Samoa Joe when he even first came to TNA, forget ROH. When he first came to TNA, when he was the TNA World Heavyweight Champion and doing his thing with Kurt Angle, okay, and he was one of the biggest stars in the company, which is, you know, hard to believe looking back all these years later. You look at him now, compared to then, physically, he's packed on quite a few pounds. And he looks like it. And I think some weeks now he even wrestles in a t-shirt. That's never a good thing. So, could he stand to lose some weight? Yeah, he probably could actually stand to lose some weight. But I don't want Samoa Joe to be stick figure Joe, you know, it's part of his charm. Samoa Joe's a big dude who goes in there and beats people up. That's his gimmick. He's an angry Samoan. He's always angry. He's always pissed off about something. You know, I've never seen smiley Samoa Joe, although I do fear that that would be the gimmick WWE would give him. Actually, I always thought that if Joe would have gone or would have expressed interest in going to WWE back then, when Umaga was still around, I always figured that the Umaga gimmick might have been the gimmick they would have given him. So again, probably for the better he didn't go back then. I'm not aware of WWE having any interest in him now. And as far as the mentions of Joe on the DVD, was that some sort of hat tip, you know? I don't think it was anything at all. I just think, you know, he wanted the Joe stuff on there. He had some great matches with Samoa Joe. Really great matches. And that's all it is. I would not read into that at all. I don't think it's evidence of anything on WWE's part. I think it was all Punk. Last email here comes from Alex from Chicago, CM Punk's hometown. Two questions, actually. First, are the rumors about Shelton Benjamin signing with WWE true, or was his last his tweet just to throw people off? Not sure what the tweet was. The belief, and this is not confirmed, the belief is that there has been discussions between Shelton Benjamin and WWE. Shelton Benjamin, apparently, this might have been just prior to the most recent ROHI pay-per-view, but this was within the last month. Benjamin asked out of his ROH contract, which I don't know if that ends his days in ROH or not. I would imagine not. I mean, him and you know, Charlie Haas are still, you know, obviously still competing in Ring of Honor. But he did ask out of his actual contract because there was interest on WWE's part possibly in bringing him in. You may have seen the reports floating around about WWE wanting to bring in some of the old mid-card talent they used to have on the roster with, you know, like years ago, just to bring them in, not so much to put them over. It's not like they put them over the first time either, but more to bring them in to give the current crop of guys people to work with. And I'm not opposed to that idea at all. I don't like the idea of bringing in a new guy and putting him in there with an established person like right off the bat. But they also don't have jobbers the way they used to have jobbers like Barry Horowitz and, you know, Reno Rogers and Iron Mike Sharp. You know, those days are dead too. So bring in guys like maybe a Shelton Benjamin or a Carlito or something like that. Maybe give them a mini push just to build them up a little bit. But ultimately just use them to have good matches with the current guys and get them over, like The Shield, like Rhodes and Sandow maybe. I don't have a problem with that. I'd say bring in the New Age Outlaws for the same reason, although I do think the Outlaws could have one little run left in them. But I think that's a fine idea. And yes, there have been talks apparently between the two sides. There's been rumors that perhaps Shelton Benjamin may even be a surprise entrant, even if it is just for one night in the Royal Rumble match later this month. Shelton Benjamin was actually on that New Japan Eye pay-per-view that Swiss Solomonster mentioned earlier on in the show here, episode 254. He had a match against, I believe it was the former ECW champion, Masato Tanaka, for, I believe, what they call the Never Championship. And it was actually I don't want to call it a bad match because it wasn't a bad match. There were a lot of good matches on the New Japan Eye pay-per-view to the point where the Shelton Benjamin match was just kind of okay. It wasn't, by no means was it the greatest match on the show, but Shelton is still very good, and I think would be a good pickup for WWE. So, are the rumors true? I believe they are. Second question. I heard WWE is still contemplating plans for a WrestleMania 30 host city. Well, that's not true. I can tell you that the WrestleMania 30 host city, whoever it's going to be, it's a done deal. As it probably is for WrestleMania the following year as well. But that's been the way for years. I mean, WWE always... I mean, by now, they're going to announce the WrestleMania 30 host city in the next 2 or 3 months. If they don't announce it the night of WrestleMania 29, they're going to announce it a month or two before then, which is right around now. So we're not going to have to wait that much longer to find out where WrestleMania 30 is. The prevailing thought, as Alex goes on to mention here in his email, is New Orleans, Louisiana, probably at the Superdome. May well end up being the site for WrestleMania 30. New Orleans, of course, is a famous city, a huge tourist destination. I'm sure WWE would bring a lot of much-needed revenue and money into the area. I personally have never been to Bourbon Street before in New Orleans. I don't know if I would be at WrestleMania 30 or not. I would certainly consider it. But the prevailing thought is that that is where WrestleMania 30 is going to be. But wherever it ends up being, it's locked in. It's been locked in. It's a done deal. It is not up for debate anymore. It is done. It is locked in, and we will know very soon where it's going to be. And like I said, even WrestleMania the following year, I don't know if the contracts have been signed or not, but I would be stunned if WWE didn't already have a pretty damn good sense of where Mania 31 is going to be as well. And I don't have that on any authority. That's just my thought. I would be shocked if that wasn't already decided. But anyway, just to continue on with the rest of Alex's email here. The front runner said to be New Orleans. Other cities have been rumored as well as Detroit, Dallas, and Chicago. The reason I bring this up is because a recent pay-per-view, Over the Limit, which was scheduled for May, that was supposed to be held in Chicago, was recently moved to October. and to Cleveland, Ohio. Now, no events are scheduled in Chicago in the near future, and I'm just looking for some type of answer as to why schedules are being changed and where WrestleMania 30 could be held. Well, I just answered your question on that. As far as why events are being rescheduled, I don't know. I mean, it could just be, things are being rescheduled because it may not even be WWE's decision. Maybe the host venue needs them to reschedule. Maybe WWE is going to be adding a pay-per-view or dropping a pay-per-view. It could be any number of reasons. But apparently Alex does not feel New Orleans is a prime wrestling city and does not deserve WrestleMania 30 as much as, say, Dallas, Detroit, or Chicago. I mean, look, I'm kind of indifferent to the whole thing. When I think of the state of Louisiana or any of, like, the Midwestern states, if I think of Mississippi, Alabama, Nebraska, yeah, it doesn't scream WrestleMania to me in that it would be hard for me to see WWE bringing a major event like WrestleMania to a, quote, non-major city like an L.A. or a Boston or a New York or even a Miami or a Chicago. They like it to be in a city like that. I'm less inclined to, like, be bothered by that when it comes to New Orleans because New Orleans is, like I said, it's a tourist destination. It's a very well-known city steeped in history, and I could see them doing WrestleMania there, and, in fact, they may be. So it doesn't bother me as much. I imagine it bothers Alex, being that Alex is from Chicago and probably would love WrestleMania to come back to Chicago. The last time WrestleMania was in Chicago was WrestleMania 22. And it was the last WrestleMania, ironically, in an arena setting. So I don't see WrestleMania going back to the same arena where WrestleMania 22 was. It would have to be, where do the Bears play? You know, although it's probably awfully cold there, even still in April, I would imagine. I'm worried about that myself, going to WrestleMania in New Jersey in April. You don't know what you're going to get as far as the weather is concerned. You could have a nice, mild, sunny day in the 50s or the 60s. You know, technically, it's spring at that point. Or you could have a snowstorm that day, and that would make WrestleMania very interesting if we had a snowstorm. But hopefully that answers your question as far as the New Orleans thing is concerned. I don't know if that's where WrestleMania 30 will be, but I can tell you that wherever it's going to be, it's a done deal, and we will find out very soon. And I have a feeling you're going to be pretty upset if I had to take a stab at it. I don't think it's going to be in Chicago, but we'll see. So that's going to do it for the mailbag this week. Send me your questions, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Send me your tweets as well. You can follow me on Twitter, @solomonster. Is my handle as we approach the magic 1900 number on there. I'm always posting on Twitter. Facebook.com/TheSolomonster is the quick shortcut to our official Facebook profile page. You can send me a friend request. You must send me a friend request. I will approve you. And you can be part of what promises to be a very lively discussion about Raw this Monday night. Big show, January 7th. Punk and Ryback TLC. The Rock is back. I'm sure people will be talking about Raw quite a bit. And you can join us on Facebook in the official discussion thread. And subscribe to our show on iTunes as well. It is free. It costs you nothing. Every time a new episode is posted, it will be automatically downloaded for you. You can leave feedback for the show in iTunes as well, which I always love. And we have a YouTube channel. My username is TheSolomonster, all one word. Again, I will only post future classic episodes of The Sound Off. Coming up next will be episode 7. I don't know when. But when it does get posted, if you subscribe to my YouTube channel, I think you get a notification. And again, those are YouTube exclusives. So subscribe to me on there as well. So that's it for episode 254. I want to thank you for tuning in and for your support of the show. I want to apologize if, again, I offended some with my fake Swiss accent. And hopefully it was entertaining, I guess, on some level. Like I said, if you were more entertained by that than some of the garbage you saw on Monday night, that's good enough for me. But that may well be the last time you hear me doing a Swiss accent. So cherish this show, because it may be the only time you ever hear that. Till next time, be well, stay safe. I will be back here next week in my normal native accent, I promise. And until then, have a good week. We'll see you right back here next time.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster Sounds Off on SCScoops.com.